Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where we explore anything and everything having to do with teamwork, leadership, culture, and other topics related to the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined, as I always am, by my co-host, Cody Thompson. How you doing today, Cody?
Doing great.
And we have Chris Jensen, a very regular guest with us today, too, down from Portland yet again.
Great to be back.
It's great to have you because today's topic is going to be particularly relevant for you, Chris, because you spend so much time with clients. And that is, Cody, tell us what our topic is.
So the title of today's podcast is Making Strategy Simple. But I want to give people the context. So we, a couple weeks ago, got into a couple of the six critical questions that are in your book, The Advantage. We answered question number one.
And these are the six questions around clarity. If you want to achieve clarity and alignment on an organizational leadership team, you have to answer these questions and be completely aligned around them.
Exactly. And we started that. It was question number one was, why do we exist? And that title is one question every company must answer. Question number two, we got into how do we behave, which is around creating a culture.
And values.
And there is a question number three, which is pretty straightforward and simple. It's what do we do? And we're skipping that one. And we're tackling this strategic anchors question,
yeah,
which
is question how three is just what business are you in? And that usually takes us about 7 minutes to help a client with that. Most of them already know.
Most of them are pretty clear on that.
Yeah. Occasionally we find one. What the reason why we go through it is because they don't know and they're a little confused, but mostly they do. But the fourth question is the first really meaty, really super value added one in terms of,
in fact, working with a client, we usually will start with question one, but we want to get to this question as fast as we possibly can.
In fact, Chris, you and I were at a big client yesterday.
That's right.
And working with the CEO and his executive team. And we dove right into this. We said, let's get clear about question number four, which is, how will you succeed? Now, the reason why we called it that is because it was better than saying, what is your strategy? Because this, in essence, gets at strategy, right?
Yep, that's right.
But when you say to people, what's your strategy? You get so many different answers.
People are confused about what strategy is.
That's one of those words like management, communication, and love that nobody really knows what it means.
That's right.
Right.
And I learned this a kind of a crazy way because, see, I started my career at a strategic management consulting firm called Bain & Company.
Right.
And it was about strategy. I worked there in the late 80s and that was when strategy was everything. McKinsey, Bain, and all these other companies were coming out and everybody said, you got to have great strategy.
Right.
So then I started my own management consulting firm about 5 years later. And when I was working with clients, they said, what is strategy anyway, Pat? And I was like, I don't know. I used to work at a firm that did strategy, but I think I must have missed the day they told me what it was. And it was because we use that word for so many different things.
So many different things.
And we said, we have to go out and figure this out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we went out and bought books on strategy. And there were as many books as there were different ideas about them. And there was no real definition of strategy. And we looked at one in particular. Michael Porter wrote a book called Competitive Strategy. And I've met him since then. Really nice guy. And smart guy. And the book had covered a lot of different things, but there was one part of it where it talked about boiling it down to three things. And he had a different way of doing it. But we took that and adapted it and developed a model that we actually came up with by looking at Southwest Airlines, a company that we thought seemed very good about strategy, very clear. So we kind of extricated the strategy of Southwest by just looking at what they did.
Yes.
And later came to find that we were right. And we use that same model for how we extracted their strategy to help other companies build them. And we'll talk about Southwest a little bit later. The point being this, we narrowed strategy down to three things in any organization. And when we presented it to our clients, they were blown away because
boiled their strategy down to three things.
Yes. Right. We said, let's take a look at your business and let's get it down to three things.
Right.
And those three things will be your strategy. And we thought that it would be too simple for them, or we thought they would say, well, we've already done that. And almost every time, in fact, I would say every time, they were like, this is really clarifying. And what we came to realize, and that's the title of this podcast, is you have to make your strategy simple if it's going to be effective.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, the way you started that story is saying, I don't know. I think a lot of listeners resonate with that. It's like, there is this theory out there, this myth that strategy has to be this sophisticated, complicated thing. And in a lot of ways, there are so many people out there that go, well, I guess I'm not good at strategy because I don't understand the complexities of it. And really, what we talked about in the beginning of this podcast before we jumped on is we have to sort of demystify or or decomplexify strategy. and the idea that strategy is something innately complex is wrong. And right. we have to undo that work so that people can actually say, hey, I have a strategy. It's simple. And because it's simple, it's effective. And because it's effective, we can use it.
Well, see, and that's the thing. A strategy needs to be understandable, memorable, actionable, and wise. I mean, it has to be wise. And it ultimately gets used as a filter by a leadership team for making decisions that are strategically consistent with what they're trying to do.
Right.
Right.
I love when you say filter, because that has helped. Even as I joined the table group, it was like, we filter the decisions we make through these three strategic anchors.
Right.
And that's our strategy. And that makes it so simple that we can use it.
Yep.
Right.
Most clients misunderstand this and think it has to do with goal setting. And I think this is something
which is that really tactics.
Which is really tactics. And
most people think of strategy as really high level, sophisticated tactical work.
Right. And what are we going to do over the next, 5 years in order to improve our business? But what that translates into is employees who don't understand how that helps them make decisions for the business every day.
Right. And there's a word that goes with strategy. It's a word I hate to use. It's really important, but it's been used so poorly and so much. And it's kind of cheesy, and that's empowerment. Now, people right. say, we have empowered our employees. And you say, what does that mean? Well, we empower them to bring their dogs to work or to, they have organic food in the cafeteria. It's ridiculous. Empowerment is really this. We give them enough information to make it clear what's strategically and culturally acceptable here. And then we let them make their decisions within the construct
exactly.
of that.
Another word you used earlier was extricate.
Yeah.
You said we went to Southwest and we extricated their strategy. Yes. And that's another thing is most people think we need to figure out what our strategy is going to be. Most companies are already operating with some strategy. It could be the wrong one. Most of the time, it's just not clear and we need to figure out what it is.
Yeah, most of the time, it's too many things. All you're doing is distilling it down, like you said, to what are the three big buckets of strategy of strategic filters that you're going to use. And oftentimes, if we won't go into how we do this too much because it's hard to do without a whiteboard, but you throw everything on a whiteboard and say, okay, which of this is working,
Yeah.
And how are we actually, because oftentimes, like you said, Chris, they have some idea of their strategy. They just haven't codified it in a really simple, understandable way.
And what's amazing, they have really smart people and they might've brought Bain or McKinsey or some other firm in to do really detailed, good work around cost cutting or market expansion. And they say that's strategic. And it's maybe high level tactics or slightly strategic, but what's missing is the hat that goes on top of it that any employee can understand. That's like, this is our company's strategy. And here I will propose a definition for strategy. It's the way you're going to go about being intentional about succeeding in a way that will differentiate you from competitors. So it's all about intentionality. Here is how we are going to be different.
Right.
And intentionally different in everything we do that will ensure our success.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And enable us to take advantage of opportunities without being purely opportunistic every time. We need a lens or a set of criteria for looking at opportunities and saying, should we say yes or no to this opportunity?
Right. I like that. It's a lens you look through that the tactics become a lot easier.
Yeah.
Right.
You said, you used a great analogy earlier. You said, a lot of people think of let's think about chess. A lot of people think of strategy as like, oh, I'm going to execute this move. And it's like, no. Am I going to be defensive in this game? Am I going to be really offensive in this game? Am I going to protect my queen in this game? And then how you go about that is just tactics.
Exactly.
But the strategy is, what is my overall differentiator? How am I going to approach the game? And everything else is tactics.
So let's go ahead and use a few examples, because right about this point, they're like, okay, how would this play out?
Right.
And we've used Southwest before as an example. The reason why is because when you look at a company, on our sports podcast, we often talk about the New England Patriots. Why? Because when a company or an organization or a team is so successful year in and year out, it's a pretty good bet that they're being very intentional and strategic.
Yep.
Yes.
And so that's why we talk about Southwest, because it really stands out. Here's a company that since 1970 or when it started has made money every single quarter and never laid off an employee. Yeah. So,
which is incredible.
Right.
Especially in the airline industry.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly regulated. Yeah. And
right. So I think it's probably worthwhile saying, let's take a look at how, is that an accident? No,
not at all.
And in fact, they have a very simple and powerful strategy that empowers their employees, including a 19-year-old young man or woman who works at the front desk or at the desk or a gate at an airport, to make decisions for themselves, because they know it boils down to three things.
Right.
And at Southwest, there's three things that matter. And that is, first of all, make sure the plane's on time.
That's right.
I said, so we don't
turn around time at the gate. How quickly can we get a plane in and out?
Exactly. Secondly is, let's make sure our fares are low. That's what they are. They're the low fare airline. We turn planes around quickly and we try to be on time as much as we can. And the third one is, the customers who value those two things, we're going to treat them really well.
What's amazing about Southwest Airlines, their strategy is not secret.
No.
You might think, what's their secret right. corporate strategy and how are they going to dominate the US market? They publish it everywhere.
And people don't copy them because they don't want to execute in such a specific way and have that discipline.
The empowerment part is huge. We fly Southwest Airlines a lot, and I've been running to a gate with a vision of getting on an earlier flight because I just want to get home to my family. Right. And when a gate agent can say, what flight are you on? Let's get you on right now. There's not going to be any increased costs. They don't have to check in with anybody. They
go,
can just say,
run for
like,
the
just
gate.
Run, get on. Like, it's not, you're not going to slow down the turnaround time at the gate. It's not going to be an impact on your cost.
And you know why? Cause they're like, yeah, we're not going to make the plane late. We're not going to add cost, and you're going to be happy with us.
Exactly.
They can empower that employee. You try that at United or Delta or American or whatever else. And God bless all those people, but they're sitting there checking their policy book and they're typing in things and they're calling their manager over and they're asking for your credit card. And they're right. saying, are you left-handed? That's going to cost more. And 30 minutes later, two more planes are gone because they don't have a strategy.
Yeah.
Right.
There's actually a great story that circulates around our office sometimes that one of our consultants was, just to make this extra practical for people, was, I think, oh, I can't remember exactly who it was, but was on a Southwest flight and asked for cold milk. And the flight attendant said, oh, we don't have cold milk. And he said, why? And she said, well, one, we don't actually have refrigerators on the plane because that would add additional complications and costs. And we try to keep our fares down. And secondly, they would probably break a lot. And as a result, we'd have to repair them during the turnaround times, which would make our planes not leave on time. So that kind of violates two of our three strategic. And it's like, holy cow, if someone at the front of imagine as a leader in a company, having your employees have that much clarity on how they can make decisions, that they don't have to run something up the flagpole to be able to make a decision like that, and it be that accurate and to be able to communicate it to a customer that way.
And employees love it.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's liberating and free. It puts every employee in the game of the of that particular business.
Oh, yeah.
Its strategy is no longer an ivory tower thing. It's put it right into everyone's hands. Everyone's a participant in helping the company succeed.
And when you have a strategy, your customers aren't going to get mad at you when you stick to it because you've already declared it. I was once standing in line at Southwest and I had my bags there and I was in line. This was before they're constantly innovating around that strategy.
Right.
But it was when you had to kind of hold your place in line. And I wanted to go to the bathroom, but I didn't want to. And then I wanted to come back. And I said, you know, it'd be so much better if you had chairs here. We could sit in line. And she said, oh, that would cost more and our fares would go up. And I was like, oh, you're right. Good decision.
This is actually another point.
I can hold it.
This is actually a good point. Strategy helps loyal customers understand why a company said no to them.
Yeah.
And still love them.
Yep.
Most companies want to continually indulge customers. And I don't want to say no. And they become like people pleasers. And then they're slaves to customer satisfaction.
Right.
Yep. When there's good reason to say no to a customer, that customers love.
And it comes back to being intentional.
Yes.
Intentional. You don't want to please customers who don't like your strategy.
Exactly.
Right. And so it attracts the right customers and repels the wrong ones.
Yeah. Southwest is a good example. There are a lot of travelers who would say Southwest Airlines is not for me. And Southwest Airlines would say, that's great. We have one class. It's called first class. We treat everybody the same. If you need a glass of wine when you sit down in a plane while other people pass by, go sit on United or go somewhere else.
And you know how many companies that might be listening to this, large or small, have spent so much time trying to please everyone and they lost their best customers because they weren't intentional about their strategy.
When you know what might be a good indicator, just as we're talking about this, I'm thinking, if your policy and procedure manual is really long,
you probably don't have a
very good strategy. And it comes out, like, think about the dignity. We talk a lot about the dignity of the human person and how much it dignifies your employees to empower them with a strategy like this.
Right.
My least favorite thing is to be on a call, like a customer service call, where I know they don't empower their employees. And I'm like, can I talk to your manager? I don't want to have to talk to your manager, but I can tell that, like, you can't make the decision. And so can you help me get to someone who can make a decision? That's just a prime example that if you're not empowering the people to be able to do what's right for your company.
Right. It's miserable.
Actually, Southwest pays a cost for being consistent with their strategy.
Oh, every company that's strategic has to lose something.
Well, not just customers. They don't charge baggage fees.
Right.
Because of their strategy.
Because if we're the low fare airline, we can't just trick people into paying another $300 to carry three bags on the flight.
Which how much annually do you think they leave on the table to be consistent?
A ton, but they would say it's more than made up for in the goodwill. But you're right. I mean, it's a huge cost to the bottom line. And any cost accountant would say, this is costing us millions. And they go, the goodwill we get from that, the loyalty we get from that makes up for it. But that will never be provable on a spreadsheet.
On a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I can tell you, I've been with the executives there. And you know what they do when they make decisions? They look at their strategy, not their bottom line.
Okay.
The bottom line is a function of them sticking with their strategy. It's not an outcome of their bottom line.
I have another example. Do you want another example?
Sure.
So mixbook.com.
Mixbook. M-I-X-B-O-O-K.
M-I-X.
I spell it because you've said it too many times. And I was like, what is that?
So first of all, these are great people, but they are a photo editor product company. So you can actually upload your photos and create a wedding album or a family vacation book and take all of your pictures you took on your iPhone and you can have an actual real beautiful hardback book.
I guess this is our unpaid advertisement.
Yeah, this might be an unpaid advertisement. Yeah. But they have three strategic anchors, and this is about helping them because, you know, all of us have seen these products before, but how does this help them differentiate themselves? Well,
and imagine if you said, I have a business idea. I'm going to make books for people for their pictures and so that they can order them online and get a book.
That's
right. But then the question is, how are you going to be successful?
Exactly. Because there's how are you going to do this? Out there that do this,
there's,
you know?
Yeah. That's right. There's a lot. And they say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to focus on beautiful design. We want templates that come from artists that are exceptionally beautiful, that really are eye-catching and trendy. And so they partner with a lot of artists and a lot of leading
design people
and that sort of thing.
So they're going for beauty.
Exactly. You're not going to get something cheap or
that looks like a template
that everybody has. Yet their second anchor is fully customizable. So you'll get a template. You don't have to customize it. You can get something beautiful that an artist made that they have created as a template, but they have created a differentiator where they've said, but you can personalize every component of it. So you can start with this well-known artist design, and then you can put your own flair on every single component
of it. So one strategic anchor, beautiful product. Second, customizable product.
Right. And usually customizable comes with complex. Their third one, they said, we've got to make it a delightful experience. This has to be something that when you get on, it's easy to use. In fact, they would say, we want it to be fun. We want it to be something that you actually enjoy creating your memory. This is about somebody creating a memorable experience and something they can keep forever and pass on. So let that be not just some weird technology, you know, system, but let it be fun.
So they chose those three.
That's right.
And if somebody comes to them and says, hey, I have a new product idea, they don't just go, should we do it? I don't know, how much money will it make? Who's going to do it? They go, can we do it beautifully? Can it be customizable? And will it be a good experience?
Exactly.
And if the answer is no, then they're not going to do it.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point because when we talk about it's a strategic filter for how you make decisions. We talked about that a little bit of how it empowers the people at Southwest Airlines. But if you go back, it's like, you know, they made decisions around only having one type of plane.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
It was great. We had the CEO come to an event, Gary Kelly, and he was like, we were in the room when Boeing was presenting these other options of planes to Herb Keller, the founder of Southwest Airlines, and said, hey, wouldn't it be great? Now then you can upgrade to this plane and you can upgrade to this plane when you're a little bigger. And Herb said, well, no, that's not going to work for us.
Right.
We want all the same planes because we want to be on time and we want to keep the cost low.
That's right.
And it's like, it's good. Now here's the thing. Having a strategy is one thing. Using your strategy is a completely other
thing.
And that's what the simplicity of this, like when you talk about Mixbook, it's like, hey, here's a template. Oh, are other people using it? Is it beautiful? Then it's not unique to us. We're not going to use that.
That's right.
If it's actually, not it's customizable, we're not going to use that.
It's right. Interesting you mentioned the 737 because Mixbook had to actually have one of these like major strategic conversations, which is they had other product lines that were actually not succeeding. And they had to look at this and say, you know what? These are not delightful experiences. We can't actually even turn them into delightful experiences. And they decided, you know what? We actually already invested a lot into it. This is going to be a tough pill to swallow. We need to shut those things down.
Yep.
And we need to focus on our core product, which we know we can do exceptional. And we need to start blowing that up and really putting our energy into that. This other stuff is just sucking us dry and we can't succeed.
So let's realize this. Most companies are not strategic. I mean, that's the thing we always look at. Well, what's that company strategy? Most company, what does it mean not to be strategic? It means to be reactive, opportunistic.
That's right.
And kind of generic. And if you're not strategic, you go, I don't know, should we buy that plane? Well, how much could we get it for? And you start making decisions based on things that are easy or short-term justifiable, not strategic. And so many companies would say, well, we have these other lines of business. We've already invested in them, so we should keep doing that. That's right. Not strategic. Or we have customers that pay us for those, so we shouldn't stop doing it. That's not strategic.
Right.
Making a decision about what you're not going to work on is actually a greater indication of your strategy than anything.
Totally. Exactly. Saying no, using these to say no to things is just as important as using these to say yes to things.
Absolutely. Here at the Table Group, our strategic anchors are, and they've changed because strategy changes over time. Now, at an airline with big capital equipment cost and differentiation,
probably rarely needs to change.
Rarely changes. But at our company, it's changed. But one that we've always had is we're going to protect the experience of working here. So we're not going to make any decisions about our business that would drastically decrease the joy of working at the company. Because we started the company to help other people love their jobs more and to make companies more effective. And if we actually think it's drudgery here, we're through.
Yep.
So we've had to make decisions. People said, why don't you do this? And it was like, because that would make us miserable.
Yeah.
And no amount of money would justify that.
Yep.
So the second strategy was everything we do has to be excellent. And that's not to say we're not bragging on that. We're trying to say
it's actually easier for me to say this since you're the author of the book, because you'll think it's a little braggy, but we have to have the best stuff on the market.
That's
and,
right.
And what that means is like, yeah, the best quality that transforms companies, that transforms lives. And we just so happen to have you as a thinker to help us do that in a unique way, that it's proprietary content for us.
Right. And if I come up with an idea and we go, that's a pretty good idea. No. It has to be a really good, really transformational idea.
Right.
And if it's not, let's not do it.
Yeah. And we don't back our way into opportunities. Like you said, it's not opportunistic. It's not like, hey, there's a bunch of consulting firms out there that are working on this thing. Should we write something about that? It's like, no, we know what we're good at. We write what we know is going to be the best out there.
And other people are better than us at other things. Let them do that. Exactly. Well, let's focus on what we can be the best at.
Yep. So that's our second.
The third one is, let's make sure that anything we do can scale. We want to have the biggest impact, the biggest footprint possible.
Right.
So here's how strategy provides you with dilemmas. So we want to scale. We want the whole world to know about our stuff, and we want to preserve the experience of working here. So sometimes we go, gee, if we really want to do this, we'd have to hire 500 people. And so we say, no, let's make the strategic decision to partner with another firm.
That's right.
And we'll give away some of the goodness financially. They'll be able to get us the scale. We'll be able to preserve our environment here.
In fact, we've made that decision. We used to make that decision internationally in our work overseas. Getting overseas requires us to get on planes. It requires us to be away from home for an extra long period of time.
Yep.
When we could partner with really great people who already have relationships in their market, who know the language, who know the culture, they can figure out how to adapt a lot of our thinking and our work into the companies that they are right around, much more effective for us than to try to launch an operation in Europe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So strategy is just, are we being intentional? Are we making difficult decisions using a filter that allows us to be consistent and adhere to what we want to be in the market? And so let's take your Mixbook example.
Right.
Let's prove that that's not the only way to be successful. There are companies out there that are doing very well, that have a very easy and relatively inexpensive and not generic, but uncustomized approach.
No, one of their biggest competitors is basically just a, you upload your photos and it just spits out a template and it's totally not personal, which if that's what you want, is you want something quick and cheap.
And there is a market for that.
There's a market for that. And Mixbook saying, but if you wanted to really honor your particular experience and be personal to you and be beautiful and
come to us. There's a market for that is a really important thing that we should go in a little bit more depth on, because what we're saying is the reason that there's not just one company in every industry is because there are lots of different people that want to consume that product in a different way.
Exactly.
And one of the great examples of this is just like coffee shops, right? There's one coffee shop, Starbucks, that you can go in, get your coffee, get out of there, pay with your phone, and you're on your way. Probably not the best coffee in the world.
Consistent.
Yeah.
Reliable. And it'll always be the same cup of coffee every single time, whether you're in Japan, London, San Francisco, or Orlando.
Exactly. And you know what you're getting. And sometimes when I'm in a hurry, that's my preferred option because I know that I'm going to get out of there quickly. Now, if I'm like, it's a Saturday morning and I want to have a really nice cup of coffee and go to a place where I can open a book and there's local people there and they kind of know my name, I'll go to one of those local coffee shops right. that yep. going to make it in a Portland, mug.
In fact, you know. Have one. Yeah. That you go to that is using our stuff that we're going to do a podcast with.
Yes. And I think we're going to try to do it in the coffee shop.
Right.
So I know they're listening. Get prepared. I know you're been skirting around it, but we're happening.
But see,
happening. That's
a totally different thing. Now, if they went to Starbucks and tried to copy Starbucks, that would be strategically foolish.
Right.
Because they're, by definition, supposed to be differentiating.
Right.
And that's why there's not just Southwest Airlines. There are a lot of people that like to have first class. There are a lot of people that want to have an assigned seat before they get on the plane. And that's okay. It just means that a Southwest Airlines in particular is utilizing their strategy in a way that those other airlines are not. They're being largely rewarded for that from a customer standpoint and from a revenue standpoint. But that's not to say that everyone should have the same strategy. In fact, this is like Mixbook is a great example. There are 100 competitors out there, including big box op like Walmart and stuff. You can go get a picture book there.
You can go get a photo book, Costco,
and
Walmart.
They're using their strategy to differentiate themselves in the market.
Now imagine that Mixbook gets a new CEO or a CFO who says, we just want to maximize profit. And they start trying to compete with Walmart. They're going to lose their market position. By the way, we should do another commercial for another book. And by the way, his name escapes me, Cody. You'll remind me or find it on the internet there. And the book is called The Discipline of Market Leaders. And we want to do it. Michael Tracy.
Yes. Yeah,
Michael Tracy. That's right. So Michael Tracy. So it's a really good book. There's in particular one model that he presents there that we borrow some of that model to inform strategy. And so we're going to talk about that model right now because we use this with our clients. And that is one of your strategic anchors. One of those three things is usually going to be the answer to this question that Michael Tracy poses in the book. If your business wants to be a market leader, you have to choose one of the following three things and be so good at it that nobody in your market will ever be better than you at it. That's you have right. to protect it at all costs, and you can't pick them all and you can't change it every quarter. You have to say, we will be the best in this.
I'm glad you're going into this. Most companies are going to hear what you're about to say and think pick our strategy is to be all three of them.
Oh, we've seen the CEO stand
so
up in
many
front of
times.
And they pick all three, which means, by the way, if you pick all three, you're not going to be any.
Right.
Right.
So by definition.
The first option is
product leadership.
Exactly.
Now everybody says, we're a product leader. No. Mixbook is product leadership.
Mixbook is product leader. It's about innovation. It's about new ideas.
It's beautiful.
It's about beautiful. It's about always putting something new out.
Right. Nike is product leadership. They're constantly tweaking their shoes and their apparel and everything else. Apple is product leadership. They're cannibalizing their stuff. Even if keep changing things. Steve Jobs was big into design. Product leadership means we have the coolest, newest, best performing thing on the market and nobody will ever out innovate us.
Right.
Okay. Right. Usually what goes with that is fairly high price.
Right.
You pay a premium for that.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you use the coffee shop example. If you want a product excellent, I'm using air quotes here, coffee shop, you're going to have to come to Portland and spend $17 on a 8-ounce cup of coffee that was like brewed through like this whole scientific beaker system.
Which
is so ridiculous, by the way.
Which for me, who's not a coffee aficionado, that is not for me.
That's not your company.
Right.
And I should not go there to get a hot chocolate.
You should not.
Exactly. So the second thing, the second option is what we call customer intimacy, which means your thing is going to be, you're going to know your customers intimately. You're going to jump through hoops for them. You're going to customize what you do for them. It's going to be a relationship. It's going to be loyalty. And there's going to be this amazing, tight, special relationship with your customers.
That's right.
And a relatable example of that is like Nordstrom. You know, everybody.
That's the most relatable big company, because most big companies can't do this.
Yeah. Right. Most of these companies are your small local flower shop, or it could be your local lawn care service,
or Cody's coffee shop. I don't know that they have the best coffee, but they know their people.
They know their people. And that's why you come.
You know, it's the coffee shop where when you walk in and you're standing in line, they're already making your order because they know you, and they're like doing it before you've even paid.
It's like they don't write your name on it because they know you. It's Cody.
Exactly.
It's the bar in Cheers.
I was just going to say it's Cheers. Do they have better beer? No.
No.
But you
everybody knows your name.
Exactly. And in the department store business, very few, Nordstrom is famous for having actually done that at scale.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a guy, Shaw, who's been my personal shopper guy for 21 years, because right after my boys were born. And to this day, I go in there and he's like, hey, how are the boys? How's Laura? What's going on? And he works at Nordstrom.
Right.
You know, so mostly though, this is not something you can do at scale.
At scale. Yep. That's right.
And by the way, the Table Group, our company, that was our first strategic anchor.
We started there.
We thought we were, because nobody knew who we were like customer intimacy.
We had no books, nothing on the market.
So people would say, hey, can you help us with performance management systems? We're like, absolutely we can.
Yeah, right.
Can you help us? We're having an awards dinner. Can you help us organize? Of course we can. And it wasn't until people knew us for what we were that we said, no, we have to limit what we focus on and do it really the best.
That's when we became product leaders.
That's when we had to shift. Yep.
Yeah. Now the third option, one that I could never do because of my personality, and that is to be operational excellence. And operational excellence means we are going to do it more efficiently and at scale. And probably the price isn't that high, but we can do it so well. And interestingly, in the coffee world, this is, and they wouldn't want to market this, but it's true. This is Starbucks.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
They could put one up on every street corner in 90 minutes. You can turn your back and they're like, hey, where did that Starbucks come from?
Exactly.
And you can get the same thing everywhere. They've standardized that. You go in your hotel room, there's Starbucks. You go to the ball game, there's Starbucks.
Right.
Heck, down here in the kitchen at our company, there's Starbucks. How do they do that?
Now, actually, Starbucks is great because while they have a higher bar than other mass market coffee shops, that is where they actually compete, is by ensuring their operational excellence. But they have pretty good coffee. It's not bad.
But a coffee aficionado, which I'm not, but I know enough that are, will scoff at you if you say that they have great coffee.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, if you say, though, for being everywhere, it's pretty darn good.
Right.
But boy, talk to a coffee person. Portland, I'm sure they've thrown a brick through every Starbucks. Oh,
Portland and Seattle, you can't drink.
That's a different question.
Yeah. Well,
and I, you know, another way of putting this is, what would threaten your business if another business moved into the neighborhood and tried to do the same thing? And so like the thing that would threaten a Starbucks is there a coffee company that has just as good a coffee that you can get faster and cheaper than them?
And everywhere.
Everywhere. And they would go, oh no, we have to address this threat.
Right.
You know,
we don't think of strategy as enabling this, but one of the beautiful things about Southwest Airlines is they're not afraid of most of their competitors, not only because they're really clear and disciplined about their strategy.
And they don't demean them.
They're not threatened because they would say, we're not competing with them in those areas.
Right.
We're so committed to being more operationally excellent and we provide a high bar of service, and we think we provide a pretty good product experience for them.
Yeah.
But we're not competing with, you know, like a Virgin Airlines that's trying to have see-through floors. So and parties, they're like, if you want a party in the sky, that's totally fine to go with those other folks.
And Southwest is operational excellence. That's what it's about.
That's what they
But what's interesting is when you're strategic and intentional, you can actually outcompete your competitors at times who aren't strategic on both. So here's one I like to say. United has no strategy. I mean, I truly believe it. And they would go, that's not true. We have strategic consultants running around doing everything. But if you said, what's your thing?
Right.
They'd say to do a little bit of everything and nothing particularly well. That's not a strategy.
Right. That's right.
And you know how you know that? Because on Southwest, they actually treat you better than they do on United. Honestly believe this. I've flown first class on United and been treated far worse on a pretty consistent level than the people on Southwest Airlines. So Southwest said, let's do this. Let's be on time. Let's have low fares. But for the people that value that, let's actually have some fun with them.
Yeah.
Right.
And they actually are more fun to fly than United, that's cost four times more.
That's right.
So when you're strategic, you can actually beat people in more than one of those things, which is crazy.
Which is great.
And I think, so let's go back to the beginning. This is making strategy simple. And the learning lesson here is, it's not sophisticated tactics.
Nope.
It is, how do you codify the three or four strategic filters that are going to shape the way you approach the game? Like, this is the chess match, right? How are you going to approach the game? And everything else is tactics.
And if you want to learn about strategy and you go to a big strategic management consulting firm, or you go to the Wall Street Journal or Harvard Business Review, they have a vested interest in making things more complex. And there's a reason they do that in certain areas. You can't make everything simple. But when you're talking about strategy at the highest level of an organization, if you don't have a on-time, low fares, and happier customers, or if you don't have a beautiful books, customized, and a better experience, all the tactical, complex thinking in the world is not going to get you to success.
Mm-hmm. And this applies to every part of a business, which is almost too easy to underestimate.
Yeah.
Because the Southwest Airlines Mixbook and even ourselves, the marketing department doesn't have to think of a new creative story every year. At Southwest Airlines, they're telling the same three-point story every single day.
Yep.
Mixbook does not have to have a creative marketing campaign. They have the three-point story every time.
And if you value this, welcome aboard. If not, we will help you find somebody better.
And yeah, if you're the CFO and you're trying to think of, how do I help inform where the company is making investments in the organization, you're going to look at those anchors and think, are we investing in things that support our strategy, or are we investing in things that distract us from our strategy?
It makes life easier for the leaders. It makes life easier for the employees. It makes life easier for the customers. And that's worthwhile. And that brings us almost to the end of our podcast. Cody, what did you
going to say? I was going to say is, a great litmus test for everyone listening is, do I understand our strategy? Does everyone on my team understand our strategy? Could our low-level employees articulate our strategy? And if not, then there's work to be done. And the last thing I want to do is point people to the book again, The Advantage. All of this is in the 6 critical questions in The Advantage. I'll link to it in the podcast notes. And there's videos on our site around strategic anchors. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking like, mine's too complicated, I'd love some pointers on how to figure out how to distill this down to 3 simple things, check out our website.
That's right. And last thing I will say is, we are going to do a podcast next week at Christmas week. And we weren't going to do that because we shut down our company and that's a good thing. But we know there's a lot of people in the car. So right, it's not a dishonoring of the holiday. It's actually just giving you something to listen to when you're in the car. So we're going to do a special one. We're going to release it on the 23rd, and we will wish you a Merry Christmas then. We'll wait till then.
Perfect.
Okay. All right, Chris, thanks for being here. Cody, as always, it was fun. We'll see everybody next week. God bless.